The following content is meant purely for educational and informational purposes and should not be relied upon as financial, investment, legal, tax, or any other professional advice. This is the Fundamentals Podcast, where we demystify crypto and help you navigate this ever-evolving internet-native economy.
But yeah, it's great to have you back on because I wanted to take this chance to dive even deeper into the amazing ZK Sync era research piece that we got to put out, authored by you a while back. I know that your analysis might not yet be moving markets, but I can tell you that it's definitely moving BD teams and especially layer two ecosystems. We got a lot of messages from different teams kind of speaking about the report. So we definitely know that people are diving into the details and trying to understand what's going on, because I think the conclusion on the ZK Sync era report was that they seem to be in a pretty good place after a surprisingly short time on mainnet. So looking forward to kind of walking through that report with you in a bit more detail, maybe here now that you've had even some more time to digest all the content that you put out 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's great to be back on the Fundamentals Podcast with you, Oskari. And yeah, we've been doing a ton of deep dives on L2s and really kind of drilling into like, how are these things being used? What insights can we start to glean as users and value locked and transactions and developers kind of move up the tech stack? So yeah, happy to jump into ZK Sync in a little more detail with you today.
Let's do that. And to kick it off, I would be interested in hearing what you have top of mind at the moment after putting that report together. And I know that you've been continuing to dive even deeper afterwards.
Yeah, top of mind, I would say, like starting with just kind of like high level, what I am observing is that Ethereum is scaling. There's obviously a lot of discussion around this topic right now, especially with what we've seen with Solana and, you know, monolithic versus modular blockchains. But what I can see like in the data is that there's just an increase in activity moving up the tech stack. So why don't I share my screen here and we can just go through some just like high level stuff before we get into ZK Sync. All right, so we are looking here just at active users. This is all data that was extracted just right out of Token Terminal. And we're looking at a number of L2s. So we've got Manta Pacific, which is one of the newest L2s. We've got Base, we've got Starknet in here, we've got Optimism, ZK Sync, and we've even added in Arbitrum and Polygon. Polygon is a side chain. We include them just because we kind of want to see the data in aggregate here. But the takeaway in terms of like active users is that we now have like 3x the number of active users on these L2s in aggregate versus Ethereum. And what you can see there, like when you look at the chart, the blue there at the bottom, that's Ethereum. So it's not really like a migration where users are actually leaving Ethereum and going to these L2s. We're still seeing a lot of activity on Ethereum at the base layer, but we're just seeing more and more users, more growth. So like the pie is just getting much bigger and we're seeing more activity sort of migrating up. So that's kind of from the user perspective, about 3x growth. And you can see in the chart here, like that's a pretty big, pretty steep increase just over the last year or so. ZK Sync is this yellow. So they are taking up a big chunk of this. They launched their mainnet in March. And so we can see that they burst onto the scene pretty quickly here. We're going to get into more of the data, but really just over this last year, just a really big growth in terms of users moving up to L2. Same story with transactions. We can see, again, about 3x the number of transactions now occurring on the L2 versus Ethereum. We have the data in here as well. That's the blue lines, but that's not included in the Ethereum versus the L2 line, which is this white line here. So this is just the Ethereum rollups compared to transactions occurring on the L1. Again, you know, just seeing some growth there, which is great to see. In terms of fees, you know, we're seeing about 10% of the like level of fees now occurring on the L2s compared to what we're seeing on Ethereum. So again, this is a little bit of a trickier analysis because what we're seeing actually here is Ethereum versus the L2s. That's this white line here. It's going up. So as we get into like a little bit more of a bull market type vibes and more on-chain activity, we are still seeing that most of that is occurring on the L1 from a fee perspective, right? So as you get congestion, those fees jump up. And that's happening. Those fees are increasing much at a higher rate than they are on the L2. So you see like the number of fees on L1 actually starting to increase compared to L2. But in general, the L2s are about 10% of all of Ethereum's revenue today. In terms of developers, same idea. You know, over the last even just like 6 months or so, we can see like pretty good increase here. And we see a slight slope downwards from Ethereum over the last year or so. So hard to say, are these developers that are leaving Ethereum L1 and now they're starting to do more work on these rollups in L2s? Hard to say, but we still have robust developer activity on the L1. We're just seeing, you know, a pretty substantial increase on the L2. So that's just kind of like the high level of sort of what I've been observing within the Ethereum ecosystem. I'll pause there and we can certainly get into ZK Sync. Again, ZK Sync is a big chunk of sort of why we're seeing this growth on the L2s. We can get into some more specific details related to the ZK Sync here.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. That's awesome. And I mean, L2s are definitely where the attention is right now. So I don't know if maybe that could be one driver behind the slight kind of decline in core developers on Ethereum L1. But another interesting insight that I saw from the first chart that you showed there related to the active users, where Ethereum was pretty stagnant, pretty flat. So the pie was growing due to scaling through L2s, but also Polygon, you had that there. It was also very flat. So even the attention that these L2s and scale inclusions have been getting, it seems that Polygon has kind of fallen behind a little bit. And I feel that at least in my social bubble, it feels that the narrative isn't really on their side either. For some reason, people are looking down on Polygon a bit, which was interesting because I think two podcast episodes ago, when I was speaking with Manta Pacific's founder, Kenny, he mentioned that it's interesting when we think of ZK tech that Polygon isn't getting the recognition that they deserve because the Polygon ZKM is really at the core of a lot of the innovation that's happening. And I'm paraphrasing Kenny here. I'm trying to get someone from the Polygon team on to dive deeper into this topic, but it would be super interesting to understand, especially now that we're speaking about the ZK tech scaling vertical, to see how Polygon's positioned, because they haven't tapped into the same growth that ZK Sync has at all.
Yeah, no, I'm super curious to see where that goes as well. Yeah, I did see him. He was very bullish on Polygon. Like you said, the ZK tech, and mentioning that even like a lot of these other projects are essentially using their tech.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the narrative, you're not seeing the narrative like in the market around Polygon. So it'll be interesting to see as these sort of more zero knowledge rollups get into everyone's sort of mind share. I think that may happen this year. We've been mostly seeing like the discussion on L2 around things like Optimism, Arbitrum, the like optimistic rollups. So with ZK Sync now scaling out, I think they're going to be launching their token this year. It will be interesting to see if that narrative really starts to play out and what that means for Polygon as well.
100% agree. Now, I pulled up the active user chart here on the blockchain market sector dashboard because here I can show it as a percentage share where you mentioned the fact that ZK Sync is really gaining traction and it's not eating into the pie, it's growing it. But if we look at it as a percentage share, we can see that ZK Sync is really, I'm not going to say taking over, but in the L2 vertical, they have really established their dominance starting from zero just a while back. So this really visualizes it clearly in my mind. And kind of building on this, because the metrics that you showcased were user activity, fees, developer activity, given ZK Sync somewhat early, what do you see as the most relevant metrics at this stage to really use to assess their performance?
Yeah, so I'm mostly anchoring back to users, you know, how many are there, what are they doing? And then from there, you're looking at the transactions that are occurring, which projects are they interacting with? Total value locked is definitely one of the metrics. And then, you know, obviously revenues. So like, you know, what are users willing to pay? But yeah, no, I think from a user perspective, the thing that's really jumping out at me with ZK Sync is they're number one when I was looking at just comparing really just actually our average users over the last 6 months. So not just looking at real recent data, but averaging it out over the last 6 months or so, they were number one compared to like their top competitors. And then if you look at the real more recent data, the last time I looked last week, they were actually outpacing Ethereum. They were outpacing Solana, Avalanche, Arbitrum, Optimism. So they were like the number one blockchain in terms of active users. So pretty impressive. They just launched their mainnet like less than a year ago. So pretty impressive to see this. And I think a lot of people are speculating that, well, you know, these are mercenary users because they may be just, you know, bridging assets over because they are anticipating this token airdrop, which we've certainly seen that type of activity. So I think going forward, like something that I'm, you know, certainly going to be keeping an eye on is user retention rates after token airdrops. You know, we've sort of observed some of this with the other projects out there and sort of seeing what happens there. Is there a real product market fit, or is there potentially more like just token incentives that are driving activity? So I think using some of these tools with Token Terminal, we can get some really good granular detail onto what's happening.
Yeah, 100%. Because you mentioned that ZK Scalar is like pretty high up compared to even L1s and in general, all projects in crypto in terms of active users. And if we look at the data from the last 30 days, you can see that in the top 10, we have 3 ZK Sync contracts, basically, or in the top 15. You have Circle, so there's a lot of stablecoin transactions. And then we have SyncSwap, which is the dominant DEX on the moment in the space. And then also DMail Network, which is like an infrastructure protocol. But given how recently they've launched, having 3 contracts in the top 15 by active users out of the whole crypto ecosystem is super impressive. Would you say that this is a data point to you was one of the most surprising finds in your analysis? Or was there anything else that kind of surprised you?
For sure. I think the transactions are also like just the volume of transactions is very high. And you're showing Circle. And when I was looking at, you know, which projects are driving the most gas fees, transactions, users, it's coming like from Circle and SyncSwap, or where I think was the other one that was popping up. And interesting to see the volume of transactions. So I was looking at like the last 6 months. So USDC users on ZK Sync had over, I believe, 18 million transactions when I last looked over a 6-month period. If you look at USDC on Ethereum L1, it was like 4 million transactions. So here you go. Yeah. And you can kind of see the breakdown. It was like 4 times what I saw at Ethereum, which is interesting. And then like, well, how does that compare to these other L2s and sort of like stablecoin activity on Arbitrum versus Optimism? If you combine both of those blockchains and compared it to ZK Sync, it was still less than half of the USDC transaction. So interesting insight there that there's a lot of activity with stablecoin USD transactions. And then DEX's, you know, SyncSwap was number 2. And, you know, when I was looking at sort of really the just breaking out the various use cases on ZK Sync, currently was observing that, yeah, like 40, almost 50% of the gas fees were coming from like DeFi type activity, transactions, you know, stablecoin payments, DEXs, lend borrow projects. So yeah, and it looks like you pulled up some more data here.
As you mentioned there, so if we look at the transaction amounts on Circle related contracts, so with USDC, ZK Sync Era is actually number 1 right now out of all blockchains by quite some margin over the past 30 days sum. So I just pulled up the top 10 from the trending contracts view. So we have ZK Sync at 2.9 million and Ethereum's the runner up at 910K. So it's under 50% of what ZK Sync has pulled in the last 30 days. And then you have Arbitrum at 1 million, Polygon at 600K, OP Mainnet 500, Base 470, Avalanche 250, and then Tron. Well, Tron is USDT dominant, so we would need to add that to the mix as well. But with USDC, it still makes the top 10.
Super interesting. And yeah, like I think this is sort of the high level. I think we are going to be going deeper on some of this to say like, okay, of these wallets that are using USDC on ZK Sync, you know, what can we learn about those wallets? What else are they interacting with? You know, do they have a ENS name within their wallet? Like, are they more sophisticated users? What's the total balance of these wallets? So yeah, we're going to be going deeper on some of this as well, but super interesting to see that starting to play out. This is why we comb through the data like this, is to try to figure out, is there something unique happening on ZK Sync versus these other rollups? And then what does that potentially mean for developers and then potentially for users coming in the future as well?
Exactly. Now, what does it tell you as an analyst when you're looking at, say, ZK Sync, where top activity is on SyncSwap, which is not a dominating multi-chain DEX? If we look at, say, Arbitrum and Optimism, Uniswaps and the likes have expanded and they're starting to take over market share, even though on a lot of chains there is like a dominant local exchange that is holding on to a lot of market share. But for example, on ZK Sync, we haven't seen Uniswap expanding there despite the mass amount of user activity. Do you have any like insight into what this might tell about the ecosystem or how you're kind of thinking of that?
It's a good question. I would expect that, yes, Uniswap will deploy over here, and it's still fairly early. And this is one of the challenges if you are Uniswap, right? In Web 2, like you don't have to, if you're an application, you don't have to deploy in like a bunch of different environments and then maintain all that code in a bunch of different environments. So it is sort of challenging. I would expect them, given the number of users that are over here, to deploy here. And then what does that start to look like for SyncSwap? Does SyncSwap have something interesting going on there, lower fees? You know, do they have some sort of differentiating factor that would keep their users from going over to Uniswap, where you would think there'd be more liquidity potentially? But yeah, don't have any like deep insight into like why they aren't over here just yet. But typically we see like DeFi be the first kind of use case on some of these chains. And like you said, a lot of the chains have their own like native DEX to start. Like, you know, I think PancakeSwap is like still the number one DEX on like Binance, for example, you know.
Yeah, I was just going to say PancakeSwap as well. If you take that as a case example, they started off, they were the dominant DEX on the BNB chain. And after that, they started implementing their multi-chain strategy. So coming on to Ethereum with the brand that they'd built on the BNB chain. And it kind of gets you wondering, that okay, with SyncSwap in such a dominant position on ZK Sync Era, will they find themselves in a position within the next year where they're going to start expanding outside of that to other scaling solutions and capturing market share even further? It's an interesting position to be in. But what I do want to show here on the trending contract, still ranked by transaction amount, is on ZK Sync, you can find a Uniswap contract, but you need to go pretty low down on the list by active users past 30 days, a bit under 12K. And I looked into this a bit, and it seems that Oku Trade, the advanced front end for Uniswap V3, has deployed Uni V3. That's like the first place where you can trade through the Uni contracts. So apparently the user activity that's coming from that is, it's still quite minimal, because if you look at Oku Trade's current stats, there's not much transaction activity going on. And if I open their analytics page here real quick, we're looking at daily volumes of about under 100K, sometimes at tops peaked at about 300K, but otherwise like 100. But there's like a little bit of activity through Uniswap contracts on ZK Sync, but it feels like it's just through these new emerging players like Oku, who haven't really broken into the mass user base yet. So going to be interesting to see how that develops.
Interesting insight right there. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. So what else we got here?
Let's pick cohorts, because I think those charts were the ones that people focus the most on. I mean, one of my favorite features, honestly, on the whole terminal are the cohort analysis charts. But this is one where there was some pretty big differences, but at the same time, similarities stage-wise. So we had the cohorts of Arbitrum, OP Mainnet, Starknet, and then ZK Sync Era, and Ethereum as well, in addition to that. But I was wondering if you want to kind of walk through the high-level insights that you took away from the cohort analysis when comparing all these scaling solutions.
Yeah, this was one of the, I think, surprising things, I guess, in the report that we put out. And the user retention rates were pretty high for ZK Sync. When I was going back to like really kind of early days when they were launching mainnet, so looking at the like February, March of 2023 period, and then, you know, looking at the subsequent months after that to determine, like, are these users coming back? So they're onboarding somewhere between 100,000 and I think 1 million users over the last 9 months, you know, per month. And then really drilling in, like, are they coming back? Are they coming back each month? And it looked like it was about 30% of the users that onboarded in February, I believe, was the month we were looking at, came back 9 months later. So that's pretty strong user retention. When you look at this, and we can look at the others, this is, you know, standing out when you compare it to some of these other their competition here. Yeah, if you want to look at Arbitrum, so obviously a pretty different, you know, view there, different color schemes. And the big question here is, you know, the elephant in the room is, these users are probably here for airdrops. We don't know for sure. Like, I think it'll be interesting to observe this. And I've kind of looked at some of these other, like Arbitrum, for example, and looked at before and after airdrop, try to figure out if like it was clearly just these like mercenary users. It's not perfectly clear, but you can see a little drop off after the airdrop. I think that's what we're looking for to see with ZK Sync. You know, it's really, really hard to bootstrap a blockchain and incentivize these developers and then get them to build things and get people building applications and then get those users. Like, that's like so hard to do. And now they've got it. And it's a matter of, you know, dropping this token at some point. And then things really do change after that token drops. Like, we'll see if there's like product market fit. But the other interesting thing to look for is just like, it creates a wealth effect. When that token gets dropped to all these users, it could potentially be about $1 billion of wealth creation, which is pretty incredible. And I think this is under talked about with crypto, just the way that value is returned to early users. This is just unprecedented for any other industry, certainly much more than we've ever seen in Web2. But if you drop $1 billion on users, that creates a wealth effect within the ecosystem. And then it also creates like this loyalty potentially with the users and a really strong community. And this is why you see like this kind of tribal nature of like blockchains. If you go on crypto Twitter, it's, you know, people sort of have their own ecosystems that they stay in. And I think it's largely because they became wealthy via the token, and that becomes almost part of their identity from there. So there's a lot going on with these token airdrops and how these communities form. But this is something we'll be looking for this year with ZK Sync and their token drop.
Really well said. And I'm actually glad you brought that up, because I think we've seen that play out in real time with Solana. And I think the Jito airdrop, Jito, however you pronounce it. But it was a pretty big wealth effect on the Solana ecosystem after everybody claiming all of Solana dead. All of a sudden, it's five-figure airdrops to anyone who had staked one soul for a while. And that really accelerated all of the activity in Solana DeFi. We had all of the meme coins just go berserk, nowhere. And that has sustained pretty well, I feel. And everybody's, of course, waiting for the Jupiter airdrop now. It remains to be seen whether that lives up to the hype or if that's going to be more of a sell the news event, so to say.
Yeah, and it created a lot of buzz. No, it's great. Great point, because it created a lot of buzz, created a wealth effect. There were meme coins, and you see that, like, why are these meme coins all of a sudden pumping? And a lot of it's because people are rotating from these airdrops into the meme coin, looking for another 10x. So yeah, it created almost like a DeFi 2.0 type situation on Solana. And we haven't really seen this just yet over the last quarter or so with Ethereum. We haven't had these airdrops, and you know, we've got like Eigenlayer coming, I believe, on Ethereum. You've got ZK Sync, I think Starknet this year. So there will be more of this coming to Ethereum, and that should catalyze sort of the Ethereum narrative again, I think, this year. So
it should. I agree with you. And you mentioned Starknet. I pulled their user retention numbers up here as well. Even though between like ZK Sync and Arbitrum and OP mainnet, there's a pretty big difference. But The elephant in the room, as you mentioned, is the fact that no token versus token launched. And then when you compare Starknet to ZK Sync, which both are still pre-token, with lots of speculation going on, their user retention rates look a lot more similar. So it is definitely worth saying out loud that that's probably what's going on. But an interesting insight on the cohorts that I've been trying to dig into, comparing like OP mainnets and Arbitrum's charts, is the fact that Arbitrum dropped their token in one go, but Optimism had a threefold. They had airdrop 1, 2, and 3, but you can't really see that positively affecting the retention anymore compared to the single drop that Arbitrum did. And that was just something that I want to kind of dive into deeper and understand. Why is it that people are content with a single airdrop and then there's not as much incentive to keep farming or keep the activity, and it's only the actual users who stay after that, and the second and third airdrops actually end up being more targeted to the real organic users, which could be pretty valuable insight for like crypto teams that, hey, maybe you should make your first airdrop a bit smaller and then actually start incentivizing via follow-up airdrops the actual organic usage. I don't know, but it's interesting to me that these are very similar between Arbitrum and OP despite the different structure of the airdrops.
Yeah, that's a super interesting point. And this is really, like you said, this is really valuable information for the treasury, right? If you're one of these blockchains and you have a treasury, you want to manage that. You want to be efficient with who you're giving your token out to and who's, you know, this is how you bootstrap your ecosystem. And so it's really important. And there's a treasure trove of data, I think, that can eventually be unearthed here. The other interesting thing with the direction some of these L2s are going, like Blast And you did a great interview with one of the co-founders of Manta, who has sort of kind of taken a piece out of the playbook of Blast and bootstrapping their TVL with native yield, something that like Arbitrum and Optimism, and I don't think ZK Sync is doing this just yet, but essentially incentivizing users to bridge their assets over and then staking those assets on the behalf of the user and returning yield to them. Will this have an impact on, you know, user activity? It certainly incentivizes users to come over. There's even further incentives for airdrops, you know, after they've already bridged their assets. So this could impact user retention moving forward as well. Something to keep an eye on. And I would expect if this starts to work, and it looks like it is based on the growth of TVL and Manta and Blast, you have to think that these other rollups are thinking, you know, should we start to roll out a program where users can bridge and we'll return yield to them? It sort of forces the hand because there's an opportunity cost. If you're a user, you're going to look at that and say, well, is there something keeping me on Arbitrum or Optimism? If the answer is no, then there's an opportunity cost to not bridge over to some of these other L2s that are offering that yield.
100%. And I feel the majority of the users that are bridging to these new ecosystems at the moment are quite crypto native. So this is the stuff that they are considering. The opportunity costs are high, especially when the actual yield APR, when you account for yield plus potential airdrops, which these crypto native users are also accounting for with all of these new networks launching, you really got to think things through in a very comprehensive manner when launching. It's not just enough to put something out there. You really gotta game it.
Yeah, for sure. And I think even Manta's then offering, you know, we're going to see probably more of this as well with Eigenlayer coming out, you know, even more yields. So you can take that receipt token from your bridged asset that you're already earning a yield on and then even get even more by depositing that through Eigenlayer. So, you know, certainly adding layers of risk to the system with these systems as well, but yeah, a lot of interesting stuff. I think we're kind of entering that like sort of Cambrian explosion of like things happening on L2. I think it's just going to keep going probably into 2024.
Yeah, I agree. Lots of new layers, and that's stuff on the tech level. That's for the crypto native audience. I still want to see more and more user interface developments. that's kind of what we're still lacking. A lot of this stuff, when you look at the marketing, even with Manta, it's like, a normie will never understand what's going on here. I mean, it's great to bootstrap liquidity and get the initial stuff going, which is, of course, necessary. But what I'm like really excited to see is how, for example, ZK Sync Era actually works on the user experience side of things. And how do you abstract the technicality from that and really start building the pie even more, which seems like L2s are already doing. But, you know, we just need more of it.
Yeah. And when that starts to happen, we will be doing these podcasts and we'll be talking about like applications, like how are users interacting with applications and not, you know, what are the technical differences between certain rollups and like what use cases could potentially happen on them. We'll just be talking about the use cases, right? And the infrastructure hopefully starts to get, I say hopefully, I don't mean this in a negative way, but like almost like becomes sort of commoditized. I heard Kenny, you know, speaking about this from Manta as well. And it's just necessary for that to happen so that developers come in and they just plug in. They're not making all these, like, they don't have to make all these decisions around which L2 to go to and like, what are the trade-offs of doing so. They just plug in, they build their app, and we get all this on-chain activity out of that. So looking forward to that.
At the same time, it is fascinating to speak about the infrastructure level and the tech, but we need a good balance between those. This is somewhat off topic, but it was actually funny. A Twitter combo I was following yesterday was somebody pointed out that as these new L2s start using Celestia for data availability, they're not technically rollups anymore. It's not an Ethereum rollup, it's an Ethereum Validium. And then Vitalik chimed in that, yes, this is correct. So we were laughing internally with the team that we're really going to need to start putting together a new dictionary with all the different sorts of Ethereum sidechains and stuff. It's like every single chain is a different Ethereum something.
Oh man, you're giving me anxiety. You're giving me anxiety with that. Yeah, it's true. Like once you break that, like, you're breaking composability, I guess, in some ways. Is that the takeaway there? That once the data is not being made available just through Ethereum, you're not a rollup. You're not fully inheriting the security of Ethereum.
I guess that's the argument.
Yeah, and it's a great point, not to go too far off topic, but we're talking about L2s and like a lot of the work that I'm doing is also to understand the economics here of like when a user transacts through an application on ZK Sync, you know, how much of the transaction fee is accruing to the ZK Sync sequencer. They're paying for data availability to Ethereum today, and that split is like 70-30, where about the margin for ZK Sync is around 30%. Now, if you start to use Celestia for data availability, and that's dropping most of the cost of anchoring the data to the L1, which is also where most of the revenue is coming from for the L1, then you're really eating into Ethereum's revenue fees. And then probably only 10% of that transaction cost is going to Ethereum as a settlement cost. So that's a big exercise to start to like sort of model out, you know, if all the L2s start to use like a DA solution, how can that scale? What does it actually mean for value accrual at the L1 level? It's possible that, and we're putting a model together trying to figure this out, but it's possible that you can have this explosion of transactions on L2. They're all being batched and then settled onto Ethereum. They're going through DA solutions. Because it creates so many new use cases, you could still have like pretty high value accrual on ETH L1. And then you have some interesting stuff, some interesting margins. A lot of those savings and fees at L2 get passed on to the user. But yeah, that is a very complex exercise to go through. And as Celestia and EigenDA start to come out, this is what we have to pivot to map out where we think the market is going to value L2s versus L1.
Exactly. Almost sounds like a bit of a pain in the ass for someone who happens to be the author of the Ethereum investment framework with all this modularity coming.
We're going through this exercise right now. We will have some updates in the Q4 update of the Ethereum investment framework. But I think as Celestia becomes more adopted and integrated with these L2s, we'll start to get more data and really be able to get some good insights.
It would be awesome if you kind of quickly also dive into ZK Sync's financial performance. So kind of comps view and how it's positioned against its peers in that sense.
Yeah. And so we've got a bunch of comps data here. This is all pulled out of the terminal as well. And we're looking at like the last 180 days. So ZK Sync, you know, mainnet went live March of last year. So just trying to get a good representation of the last 6 months or so. And what we can see here is this, you know, column J is like the ranking comparing ZK Sync to Base, Arbitrum, Optimism, and Starknet. And they're coming in number one across most of these important KPIs and financial metrics. So just in terms of revenues, 36 million over the last 6 months, you know, certainly outpaced the competition. Arbitrum was number two there. And then we just have, you know, this is the data availability and the settlement fees that are being paid to the L2 today. As I mentioned, those margins are generally around the 30% mark. We'll see where this goes. Like I said, with Celestia, it should increase these margins and less being paid to Ethereum. Some of this will go to Celestia and EigenLayer, I think, moving forward. In terms of active users, number one, again, these are averages over the last 6 months. As mentioned, ZK Sync like recently was doing more daily active users than Ethereum, Solana, Avalanche, and as well as the alternative L2s. 9 month user retention. This looks like something got blocked out here, but this was 30%. We went through this already, so I won't go too much into the user retention. Mentioned transactions. Again, these are averages, so almost a million. That's like pretty much on par with Ethereum itself, and significantly higher than some of the alternative L2s. The one area that ZK Sync is coming in behind the competition is just on the value locked. So about 150 million of value locked, you know, a little bit lower than Arbitrum, Optimism, Base as well. Arbitrum is number one here with $2.3 billion of value locked. And also number one in terms of just like ETH that's been bridged over to Arbitrum. From the core developer perspective, ZK Sync, very strong as well. This is looking at active developers within the project's GitHub repositories over the last 30 days. And so, you know, 64, pretty strong developer cohort there, slightly higher than Optimism, which came in number two at 60. Transactions per second. This, I don't put a ton of weight behind this right now, just because we just don't have the volumes of transactions to really get good insights. However, it looks nice that ZK Sync is, you know, pretty well ahead of their competition just in terms of the transactions per second. and average cost is the other one that we're looking at. And they came in number two, tied for number two behind Base, was the lowest in terms of the cost per transaction. So pretty strong numbers here. And like I said, looking forward to seeing how some of this potentially changes once that token drops. Do we get more loyalty, more user activity, and new projects, new developers entering the ecosystem? Or do those users potentially go to Blast or go to Manta or go to the next L2 opportunity? But yeah, impressed with what they've built, and we'll certainly be keeping an eye on this like zero knowledge narrative for 2024.
Definitely. I think there's a lot of interesting points we touched on that we both need to dive deeper into, and looking forward to pushing out even more analysis and even more granular level reports through Token Terminal's channels and of course through the DeFi report as well. But we'll for sure start doing these more actively, because I feel this sort of kind of back and forth dynamic is also a really good way to uncover some stuff from the terminal.
Yeah, this is great. Thanks for having me on again. Always happy to jump in. I'm in the terminal all the time. I'm constantly writing and doing research. So always happy to jump in with you.